Oh, there we go. Stuff is all done.
I do not have a gavel. I feel like I don't need a gavel. Right. This meeting is now in session. The meeting of YCD is back from closed session. We do not have anything to report. Or do we have anything to report?
No, there's no reportable action.
Perfect. Let's start by taking a roll call.
Yolo County?
Here.
City of Davis?
Here.
City of West Sacramento?
Here.
City of Winters?
Here.
City of Woodland?
Absent. You have four?
Vice Chair, I was just going to note that we have Director Chapman online. He's participating remotely.
Thank you so much. And I don't need to note it because you already did, right?
Yes. And for just cause reasons, we're just saying.
Perfect. Let's move now to the approval of the agenda for March 11th.
Motion to approve.
Lauren will second.
All right, so I have a motion by Commissioner Ferrix and seconded by Commissioner Lauren.
Yolo County?
Aye.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland is absent. Motion passes.
Great. And I want to make sure that I did not, and so that was approving agenda for March 11th. We are now going to consent calendar, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We good? And we talked about closed session already? All right. Sounds good. We are marching right along. So now I would like to approve consent calendar, specifically the board meeting minutes for a regular meeting of February 12th.
Do we have public comment?
Oh, thank you very much. You're going to have to keep reminding me of that, by the way. Do we have public comment for item 4A?
I think it's for items on the consent calendar or items not on the agenda, so we'll take both.
Perfect. Do we have public comment for items on the consent calendar or for anything that's not? All right. Please come on up.
Alan Hirsch, Bill Davis Lorax. Welcome to the Davis Camper. It would be nice if you would put the meeting would be this Davis a few more than a couple days ahead of time if you really wanted Davis participants here. There's no point in having a meeting here in different cities unless you give some people some notice so they can plan their day around it. Giving those few days as one line in a big 50-page standard, people aren't going to know the places that's here that they're accessible, if that's your objective, other than just checking the boxes we had in Davis. At Tuesday's Davis City Council meeting, there was discussion about a letter that basically just recapitulated state policy about freeway widening. They quoted basically state policy that freeway widenings don't work. They're antithetical to the state climate plan. And they're doing this climate equity. And that was too controversial for our city council, which is quite interesting because our city council seemed to figure out how to navigate the Israel-Palestine discourse and find a consensus position, but they couldn't find a consensus position on IE. I thought that was rather interesting. At the meeting, there were 39 inputs, three of which were professional paid staffers from agencies who testified in favor of the project. Two were both former members of Yolo Transportation District. Of course, they defended the status quo moving ahead by auto-oriented development transportation project. Don Saylor, who called the project sustainable, and Ken Wagstaff from Mayor of Davis, he thought the project was wonderful. But, of course, as he developed the system we have, which is causing the congestion, there were three civilians that made comments in favor of the project, in favor of, not opposed to the letter, but only one of them basically didn't object to the tolling. So only one person liked a toll lane that I heard last night of the 39 public comments. There were 34 public comments that favored the letter and opposed the widening. 34 out of 37 civilians. But I was told that those people had agency by people that we should listen to that. We should listen to the people that didn't show up. As you know, at on January 9th meeting of the City Council, Will Arnold, the former Caltrans director of media relations, called widening freeways insanity because it won't work. And also, Bapu Bayalta made some interesting comments. He basically said, he said, quote, one of his comments was in quote, in short, Yolo Transportation District, State Guide, and Caltrans are doing their best to meet the mandate to provide diversity of options. And I respect that. But in my view, District 3 Office of Caltrans has repeatedly and egregiously pushed solutions into the Yolo Way congregation that are unsustainable, are short-sighted, and in my view, flagrantly in violation of SEEK requirements to mitigate VMT. This is City Councilmember Davis. The project will go to the courts regardless of what we do here tonight, regardless of what CTC does in a few weeks. It will go to the courts. We're doing something egregious to our climate by moving this ahead. And we're not to be having any money to fund social equity. Mark my words, we don't have enough money to fund the mitigation program. I've asked repeatedly, show me where there's enough money to fund the 57 million BMT miles you're going to mitigate every year. I have not seen a plan. This is a short-term solution. You won't even fund the long-term aspect of this project. This is bad news. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other public comments online?
There are no public comments online.
Okay. With that, I will take a motion to approve the consent calendar.
So moved for A through 4C.
Or seconded.
All right. Can we take a vote?
Yolo County?
Aye.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
Woodland is absent. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you. That moves us to our regular calendar and agenda item 5.
Hello. Good evening, everyone. For the record, my name is Daisy Romero, and I am the Director of Transit Operations. And with me today, I have our Assistant Planner, Cassandra Barrientos. So we're going to be talking about the Yolo B-Line expansion. So jumping right in. Next slide, please. So table of contents, so just background, we're going to be talking about, you know, where this service was previous to what we're proposing today, and then also looking at some of the outreach that we did, you know, what we're proposing as far as the service, and then what impacts that service may have, and then what are the challenges and next steps. Background. So this route, so previous to the Beeline and your ride, we had a route called Route 217, and it ran from Woodland, Dunnigan, Zamora, and Yolo, and it's what we called our lifeline service. So it ran twice a week, once in the morning and then once in the evening, and I believe it was like every other Sunday, and that was it. So this was the route that didn't really work for a lot of our riders. It had a very poor ridership, and it just wasn't sustainable for our community. You know, if people were able to get into town, but then they weren't able to, you know, go to their appointments outside of Woodland, whether that was in downtown Sacramento, Davis, Winters, wherever else, they were just essentially stuck in the city of Woodland. And then even then, like, their time in Woodland was also very short. So the trip started around like 8 in the morning, but then their return trip was like by 1 in the evening. And so that was it. So if they missed that one trip, they were essentially stuck in Woodland, or they had to call a family or a friend to come pick them up. So, and that was what we called our lifeline service. So that ran for a couple of years, up until when the pandemic happened. And then it was suspended afterwards because of poor ridership and because Your Ride came along, which is essentially now Beeline. The service was cut. So, however, forget his name. I don't want to offend anybody. There we go. Supervisor Barajas reached out to us sometime in the summer and was like, hey, you know, I'm getting, you know, feedback from my community members in the town of Yolo saying, you know, we need a service. Like, we don't have anything. There's nothing to kind of get us out of the community. We just built this beautiful, new, remodeled Yolo County Library out here, and, you know, our community members can't do much with it other than just being stuck in town. And so our staff pretty much went out. We met with Supervisor Barajas, and then we also went out and met with a few folks, and we'll get into that as the presentation goes on. But that's essentially where we kind of started with the background and how we got to where we are today. Next slide, please. Yeah, and as I mentioned, so we started doing a little bit of the Yolo outreach, and I'll let our assistant planner, Cassandra, touch on this because she was the one kind of holding down the front lines when we were doing this outreach for the town of Yolo. So essentially we held two events. One was extremely successful, and that was the one that took place on February 20th, and that was the Eat Well Food Drive in Yolo, where we had over 100 participants there. So I'll let Cassandra touch a little bit on that, on, like, you know, some of the comments that she heard back from, you know, the people that were there, even including some of the staff that were at that event. So,
yeah, so I led the outreach project at the Eat Well Food Drive in Yolo. It's a really small community, so that was the one opportunity that we got to really hear from voices of the community and even people that traveled from outside of Yolo into Yolo for the food drive. And through that event, I was mainly aiming to get feedback on where they would prefer the stop locations to be, just because it's about 4 blocks wide by 5 blocks long, so it's very tiny. And we got the responses, and the library is one of their newest built locations. It's very brand new. It provides shelter. They have nice benches outside, so it's a very welcoming area. So that was definitely where we got the highest response, and it was right across from the food drive, so I think that also aligned with people who were traveling outside, and if they needed a ride, they could come in and get their food donations. I also went back to visit the following week, and I was able to speak to the library associate there, and so she was the one that recommended that I go to the food drive, and she let me know that people kind of felt that it was a little bit of a burden that they would have to ask their neighbor to go ahead and ask for a ride if they wanted to go to a doctor's appointment, because they were aware that they had a former service that operated 2 times a week, like the lifeline service that Daisy mentioned. And she mentioned that it just didn't work well for everybody, and that she was aware that we, or let her know that we were going to combine the, we want, our goal is to combine the Knights Landing with the YOLO service. And she was like, I know that it could be an added time with people's trips, but she wanted to advocate that it would allow people to still be able to travel to wherever they need to go in a timely manner. And I let her know that, I'm a little nervous. It's my first board meeting. But she let me know that she was looking towards, very excited to be able to be the advocate for the community and be the voice, because she let me know that she was the one that kind of reached out to Angel Barajas and his team. So overall, the outreach event was very successful, and I was really grateful to hear back from the community because I had never been there myself. So I think being able to actually hear from the people was very enlightening, especially considering that they haven't had a service for some time now. So being able to bring back service where they can book rides whenever they need it to get to where they need to go is going to be something that we look forward to providing.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. Next slide, please. Okay. So what we're proposing. So essentially, as we mentioned, this is a service that we're going to add on with the Knights Landing service. So not much is going to change. The hours are going to remain the same. The cost is going to be the same. The only difference is now that the service is going to go also from, so say, for example, it starts a Knights Landing and someone gets a ride or books a ride in YOLO, then that vehicle will deviate to YOLO, pick that person up, and then drop them all off in Woodland, or sometimes, like, depending on, like, what time they get scheduled, it would either drop the people off in Knights Landing in Woodland and then go pick up that individual in YOLO and then bring them into town. So really all we're doing is just essentially adding an additional service zone to the already existing Knights Landing service. So, again, not much changes to, you know, we're not adding a whole different service. It's really just adding a separate zone to the Knights Landing one. So hours, you know, again, the same. So from 8:30 to 5:30, Monday through Friday, and then you have Sunday service as well, again, 8:30 to 5:30. So it's going to be a huge benefit for the town of YOLO to have this service. And again, way better than what it was previously, which was that one trip in the morning and then the one trip in the evening, and that was like Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then that was it kind of thing. So this is going to be a huge benefit for the community of YOLO to have this service. So one of the things that I do want to point out was when we did our outreach, we essentially proposed 5 stops within the town of YOLO and just kind of said, hey, pick which one you think works best for you guys. Obviously the champion was the YOLO Branch Library. I think the second one that came in was the Cache Creek High School, which is like literally right across the street from the library. But, you know, when working with staff and kind of just seeing like the dynamic of the town, we really wanted to like give what would be like the west side of town an opportunity to board instead of having to like walk all the way down to the library, Cache Creek High School. So essentially what we were proposing was, even though the 5th Street at Sacramento didn't get the most votes, because of where it's at on the map, it gives the town service on the west side and on the east side. So that way people have 2 options to board. And the reason why we didn't want to do more than 2 stops was, again, for efficiency. I think right now on Knights Landing we have 3 stops, and that works pretty well because they're pretty spread out in Knights Landing. And then kind of the same thing for YOLO. You know, we want to make sure that people are still getting the most efficient service that they're getting. And so if we kind of keep adding extra points here and there, it's essentially going to slow down the service, because then, like, if you notice on the map, all of these stops are very, very close to each other. And so for the vehicle to kind of keep going back and forth to these stops that are, like, literally across the street, it just slows down the process. So that's why we're only proposing 2 stops in the town of YOLO. So one on the far west side and then one on the east side, so that we're still able to accommodate, you know, as much as we can in the town of YOLO. So next slide, please. So this is the map. The beauty of this, too, is that the YOLO residents are also going to be able to use all of the stops in Woodland. So the service is not going to be limited in Woodland either. So if they want to get picked up in YOLO, and then they would essentially be able to get dropped off anywhere here in Woodland as well. And so that's a really nice feature, too, in the sense that, like, if people had, like, doctor's appointments, they can still get dropped off there. You know, if they wanted to connect with any of our other services, like FixRoute, they're still able to do so. And again, same rules apply. So it'd be free transfers. You know, again, trying to make the process as seamless as possible. So that's what we're proposing. This is what it would look like. So, you know, if all goes well, this is what the people of Yolo will be able to use once the service goes into effect. Next slide, please. So the big question, and I know this is a hot topic, was, you know, what are the impacts to our residents and Knights Landing? This is even a question that Supervisor Barajas' team brought up. Just, you know, we want to make sure that we're kind of seeing all, you know, views of the situation. And so one of the things that I had our team at RideCo, which is our software provider that helps us run the DMLine service, was kind of run like some scenarios like, hey, what would it look like right now? What would it look like if we added the town of Yolo? And then what would it look like if we said, hey, they can go from Knights Landing to Yolo to Woodland and like just kind of like go back and forth? And so essentially what they did was what you see in this table is the first column, you know, it's current. So max travel time right now between Knights Landing and Woodland is about 30 minutes. The average travel time is around 21 minutes. And then the search delay, essentially what it means is that's how long an individual may wait if there's no service at the time that they're looking for a ride. So the delay is about 22 minutes. The max that they would wait would be about 50 minutes, so close to an hour. And that's like worst case scenario kind of thing. And so the average users with searches wait times above a threshold. So the threshold right now that we have is like 15 minutes. And so the way it was explained to us was 40% is what it's 40% of users. So when they're doing a search, and there isn't a vehicle available within that 15 minute time frame, that's how many people are impacted currently right now, which is about 40% of our, users when they're doing a search at like the peak time. So if we were to do, you know, jumping over to the second column, if we were to add Yolo to Woodland, you know, it goes up by 15 minutes. Because, again, you have to take into consideration, like, the travel time that they're going. So if you look at the map, you know, they're having to travel between Yolo and Woodland. So, you know, you're going to add that additional, like, 15 minutes. But on average, it's still not that bad. You know, you add, like, a couple extra minutes. But the benefit is you have anywhere between, you know, you can see anywhere between 4 and 21 riders potentially. So if we were to add the town of Yolo, we're still gaining ridership. You know, one of our biggest concerns was like, what are we trading for? Like, are we just trading one additional rider in the town of Yolo, potentially losing more riders in the town of Knights Landing because now the service becomes like undesirable? Because of efficiency reasons. And so pretty much what the map is showing is that even though people's travel times may potentially increase, our ridership still is increasing by that point. So it's still kind of like still better. You know, it's a little bit of a sacrifice, but, you know, we're still, at the end of the day, we're still seeing that ridership. And like I said, we're still benefiting the community that's essentially isolated right now. So, I'll pause right there if anybody has any questions, because I know, unless we want to hold them to the end. Okay.
I should ask my colleagues.
Good holding? Okay. Good holding.
Next slide, please. So some of the challenges and next steps. So, I mean, we do recognize that there are potential impacts to both the experience and the travel times for not just the community members of Knights Landing, but for Yolo as well. Because, I mean, if you keep in mind, you know, if everyone's trying to book a trip at the same time, we only have one vehicle service in these zones. Potentially in the future, depending on how our funding looks, you know, if it gets really, really popular, hey, we could add an extra vehicle. But at least for the time being, we only have that one vehicle that will be servicing both towns if approved. And so that is a potential impact. And I say potential because, you know, we don't know until the service actually kicks off. You know, it could just be maybe there's one or two users and there isn't that much of an impact to the members of Knights Landing, or everyone's just kind of like happy. There really isn't any huge impacts to either the experience or the travel time, and everyone's just kind of like traveling at their own different times, because it could potentially be that. Right now, what we see in Icelandic, everybody usually gets picked up at like the top of the hour. So around 8:45, everyone's kind of like waiting to get picked up and then dropped off. But there's a possibility that maybe the people in yellow are like, well, we want to get picked up at 10. Like, we don't care about getting picked up that early in the morning. So, you know, there might be some trade-offs in the sense of, like, they may not be traveling at the same times, but we won't know until the service actually kicks off if there will be any potential impacts to the experience and both the travel times. And so some of our next steps essentially would be, you know, putting the service into effect starting in July. And I do apologize for the confusion. I know I believe the packet said April 1st, but the intention was to do that July 1st.
That was my fault.
So that way we give our riders a little bit more time to kind of like digest the information, and, you know, if they have any feedback or anything like that, and, you know, they can let us know and we can kind of go back to the drawing board and make any adjustments. So, but of course, that doesn't go without saying that this is something that we will be monitoring, just like how we're monitoring our other beeline service zones in Woodland and Winters. This is something that we're not just going to be like, all right, here you go, and then you completely forget about it. You know, we are going to be looking for trends. You know, we are going to be looking for, you know, like, what are those impacts? You know, are our people in Icelandic being impacted, or are the people in yellow being impacted? Like, you know, what are some of the things that are going on with these services? And so, it's still something that we're going to be looking at if we do need to make any kind of operational changes in the future. Like I said, like, if we start to see, like, way more demand for both the night planning and the yellow community, you know, we may need to go and say, hey, maybe we need another vehicle out there. You know, similar to the situation in winter, maybe there's a need for either an additional vehicle or maybe even kind of tweaking and bringing back some kind of, like, fixed route service. But, you know, again, still kind of like looking at all that data, looking at all those trends, continuing that outreach. You know, we still want to hear what the community has to say, because maybe they're like, hey, like, 8:30 is too late for us. Like, maybe we actually want to get out there a little bit sooner. Or, like, maybe both Night Landing and Yellow are like, hey, can you guys get here earlier? Like, we don't mind about, like, cutting an hour later, but if you guys can just pick us up earlier, that'd be better, you know. So, you know, we're not going to forget about, you know, doing our outreach and keeping up with the community. You know, so it's something that we still kind of, we're going to keep pushing for. So, and I believe that's it.
Okay, thank you very, very much. Let's go to, well, so question for my colleagues. Do you guys want to ask questions now? Do you want to do public comment first and then get questions?
I'll ask questions now.
Okay, perfect.
All right. First, I want to say thank you for looking into this. I think that, you know, the loss of the 217 was definitely felt by the community. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we could, you know, look at it again with fresh eyes, with new service, speaks to our professionalism and all the great things that we do with Yellow Transportation District. But I wanted to just ask two germane questions for me. One is, it seems very important to continually collect information from these riders. How can we continue to collect information as they ride in real time? You know, kind of like ground truthing how this the rollout is. I would be interested in that. And the other one is, how will we evaluate its success? I think going into it, we have to know what we're how we're going to measure it. So those are my two main questions. And by the way, the flowers on the map where the beeline goes was not lost on me as a prior beekeeper. That was very nice.
Yes, big thanks to our marketing and communications person, Chris. I've heard through Rideco that is, like, the best, like, marketing and advertising that they've seen so far, so much so that they've even asked us to come in, like, speak during their, like, presentations, because it's just so awesome.
So the two questions.
Yes, so the first question, so collecting ridership or collecting rider information in real time. You know, we have multiple ways that we can collect that, Jesse. So in the app, we can work with Rideco to kind of put, like, either a reoccurring survey or, like, a question like, hey, how are we doing? The other thing, too, is I think right now you can even, like, rate your trip. So once your trip is completed, they have generic, like, driver was awesome, but there's also spaces where you can even make your own comment and say, hey, like, the trip was great, but it was a little delayed. Or, like, you know what, I really wish they would have showed up on time, or everything was smooth. You know, everything from booking to writing to arriving was great. So we do have that capability of tracking that information in real time. One of the things that we're going to be doing sometime this month as well is we're working with UC Davis to kind of get some feedback from our riders, and that's even our existing riders and our new riders. And so what we really want to see is, like, you know, what are our previous riders who were using your ride, you know, how are they enjoying the service right now? How is it benefiting them more now than previously? Because if you guys remember, your ride was dial ride. So basically you had to call to book your trip. There was no app. There was no, like, technology built into it. It was literally just, like, pick up the phone and, like, schedule a ride. Now you have that option, but then the other option too is the app. You know, you can schedule through the app. You can pay through the app, or you can pay in person, but most people that we've seen usually book their trip through the app, and then they'll pay through the app. And so that's one of the benefits, too, of using that technology, is that we can kind of reach our riders in real time using the app. Or we can go the old school way and just put out a survey and just have our people, our riders, you know, use the survey if we wanted to go a little bit more into that with their questions. But it is something that we're still kind of working. We are... It's in the back of our mind constantly as far as, like, how is our service, you know, benefiting our riders? Like, what can we do to make the service better, and how do we reach them? We know we have this, like, advanced technology with the app, but we're not going to be able to reach everybody with that app. You know, for example, like, our night landing riders, a lot of them still fall to book their rides. And so we kind of need to be creative in our senses in that fact that we can't just rely on the app for everything. We have to kind of either be doing in-person outreach. Luckily, we have their contact information, so we can always reach out to them either by phone call, by email, or even in person, riding the bus and kind of getting their input in real time. So, yeah, so we have multiple ways that we can get that information in real time. And then evaluating success, that's a great question. So right now we have some KPI goals that we had first established when we were launching the Beeline service. And so we created thresholds in the sense that, like, okay, we're aiming for, like, let's say, like, 90%, like, satisfactory. Or we want to make sure that we're running on time, like, 90% of the time. Like, we want to make sure that our drivers are not, like, running late, you know. And so we set these thresholds, and so when we're not meeting those thresholds, those KPIs, those key performance indicators, then that's when we'll know if we're being successful or not. And so right now we have bi-weekly meetings with RideCo, where we kind of go through all of our scorecards, and they kind of tell us, like, hey, you know, these past 2 weeks, like, your drivers, we're running a little bit late, like, let's make sure, like, we keep up with them, or let's make sure we're calling them and making sure that they are running on time. They're like, hey, like, this week your guys' customer service, like, satisfaction was great. Like, keep it up. Like, keep it moving, you know? So we do have those thresholds that we had established in the beginning, and we do meet with RideCo, and so they usually tell us. And we have, like I said, Cassandra here is, like, kind of like my go-to person when it comes to Beeline information, and so we are monitoring that, at least on a daily basis, to make sure, like, if we do see something come through that we're like, whoa, like, why was that bus, like, super late? We jump on it pretty quickly, and we're like, hey, like, what was going on? Like, oh, we were having, like, technology issues, like, but we were able to get the app back up and running. And so,
All right, great. Director Bolsich.
That's great. Thank you. This is amazing. Just a quick question on the public outreach, and when you were at those events, how did you engage people, and what was that like? Were they receptive, and how did that go? Just real quick.
Yeah, so there was, like we said, 100 people that attended the event, and so they lined up. So as they were lining up, we would just quickly be like, hey, give them a quick rundown of what Beeline is and get their response, kind of just showing them a map where the stop options were. And they were very open and receptive, honestly. Everybody that was there gave us a response.
So no one was like turning us away. They're all like, oh, they were all really interested. Like I said, a lot of them used to know the former service operated there. So they were really excited about the potential of getting Beeline into YOLO.
That's great. Thank you. And then last final question. It seems like it could go, you know, like number of stops in YOLO. You could either say one's enough or we need four. So the spacing of maybe two stops, how did you decide on that? Is that like number of minutes walking or number of blocks between stops? And is that about similar to the spacing in Woodland and Knights Landing?
So the reason why we chose those two is because of proximity. So I think, sorry, you took down the presentation, Heather. I was going to try to show on the map. So the town of YOLO is really, really small. And so a lot of these stops are like the post office, the library, and Cache Creek. They're all pretty much, I want to say, like within a minute or two of like walking distance. But the reason why we decided to go with like the 5th Street at Sacramento and the library was just because of the way they were positioned within the town. And so one's like on the west side of town, and the other one's on the east side of town. Like, and so we just wanted to make sure we had coverage on both sides. There wasn't really any particular like, because it was like 2 minutes shorter, 1 minute shorter. To be honest with you, they're all like pretty close enough. But it was really just more like we want one on the west side and we want one on the east side because we know on the east side there's all the other alternatives are pretty much like next to each other.
That makes sense. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Director Barrex.
Thanks very much for the updates. I really appreciate all the outreach that's been done on this item, and we've been talking about it for a couple of months now, so I'm excited that we finally have it before us. I think, you know, it seems like we can reasonably add YOLO without, you know, sort of really decreasing the convenience to others. Obviously, we'll see, though, as that starts to bear out with some usage. I mean, I think YOLO is small enough. It probably could, you know, that those three top stops that you were talking about, sort of post office, library, and Cache Creek, they're all really within just like, you know, half a block of each other. And, you know, you probably, if it ends up being sort of too much, I mean, you probably could ultimately just sort of scale back to the library as the main and primary stop, and probably still capture most riders. But I'm really excited to see it be added into the mix. And I think finally, it's less of a question, but it just is more rhetorical too, I think, but also would love to know, you know, and I know we had an update a couple months ago on sort of just a sort of a preliminary sort of 3 months Beeline experience in terms of Woodland, but it would be nice to know when we have an opportunity sometime in the months ahead to like actually have a real discussion about the service, you know, and how it's going. I mean, I think we're always continuing to sort of look at the numbers, certainly, but like we've heard that winters, this is a perfect example. You know, we know that people have started to already figure out the system, which is they're all reserving the spots, you know, and going from sort of, you know, taking the Beeline from Winters to Davis and conceivably back again. But it's basically, it's acting like fixed route service is what, I mean, the way they're using it. And that's not what we, I think, are intending to do necessarily. So I think we need to really, so this is great and very supportive of it and happy to even make the motion, but I think we also need to just have a further discussion in the months ahead about sort of the fine-tuning of some of the other services because we know it's not exactly performing as the way I think we all thought it was going to.
Thank you so much. Chair Chapman, I see you online. I want to make sure I give you a chance to speak.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you. So thank you for the presentation and for bringing this forward. I don't have any clarifying questions. I do think that exactly what Director Farris just mentioned, I think, is the key part. And then the next step, some of the second item around the follow-up that comes back to us. And I think after July 1st, within a handful of months or less than that, you know, getting kind of a deeper dive into the system as a whole with YOLO added is an important next step for that. So I appreciate the work that's been put into it and bringing this back, and I look forward to hearing some of the success stories for adding this service to YOLO, as we all know and have talked about. It's quite an isolated area, and I think that this will be a great benefit to them. So I think just staying on top of, you know, the data as it rolls in and not having it be 6 months down the road before we look at this and any of the impacts or unintended consequences that may come of it, if there are any. But I think it's important for us to stay on top of this. And then, as Director Farris said, look at the system as a whole once this one is in and successful.
Thank you, Chair Chapman.
So I do have, so one, thank you both so much. Great presentation as well. I wanted to, could we go back to just the slide that had the impact in regards to numbers? I think it was navy blue. Perfect. And I just wanted to make sure that I understood. So when we say current, this is current meaning going Knights Landing and to Woodland, and it's the one van, right?
Correct. Yes.
I just wanted to make sure. And so when we say going up to 60% and 70%, what that means, and I just want to reflect back to make sure I understood, mm-hmm. that 60% of users will be waiting longer than a certain amount of time?
So over the 15-minute threshold. So essentially how Radko explained it to us was, it was the number represents the percentage of users who are offered a ride where the best available ride departure time is more than X minutes after the search time, which is usually 15 minutes.
Okay. And then if we added, in addition to that, another stop, so that would be Knights Landing in addition to Woodland, I think is what that's saying, so back and forth, be able to go to Knights Landing, mm-hmm. then 70% of users will be waiting more than 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that is helpful. Is that, what is the general threshold that we should or try to keep? Is it, because I know we're at 40, it's 40, like great, in fact, you're exceeding expectations mm-hmm. at 40, is it not great?
Yeah, that's a good question. So, I mean, it's one of those, how should I explain this?
I'm happy to jump in here, too, while you're collecting your thoughts, because I have some thoughts, and then I want to invite Daisy as well. We're in a little bit of uncharted territory here, right? I mean, honestly, like, we're sort of one of the pioneers of trying to use this kind of a service model in a rural area. I mean, some of the work that Daisy and her team have been doing, even with Winters, is they've had to make some adjustments to the app to recognize that, like, this is not an urban area, and these rides taking longer are okay. Because if you're talking about people who literally have no other choice, and it's not to devalue their time, mm-hmm. but these are folks, this is still a significant improvement for many people compared to having to ask for a ride, right, you know, pay for an Uber if an Uber is even available. And so I think it's something we do need to spend more time on. You know, just some of the points that were just made about, you know, coming back to the board with 6 months worth of data and really talking about this, because I don't think that we have the indicators of what success looks like in an urban environment, I don't think work here.
Okay.
Right? And so, you know, I would encourage the board to, you know, to give us your feedback on that, and that we should be probably more intentional about talking about that.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you. The other question I had was in regards to, well, so actually just two more questions. One, so with this in mind, you have current adding YOLO to Woodland and then the YOLO Woodland Knights Landing. Is there a recommendation? So you've given us three, and just to be clear on what your guys' recommendation would be.
So essentially what we're doing is the people in YOLO would only be able to book a trip to go from YOLO to Woodland.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Knights Landing group would be Knights Landing to Woodland. So our recommendation would be if the board could approve the one to go from YOLO to Woodland, because it's the one that has the least impact.
And that's the middle column.
Yeah, no, I figured, and mm-hmm. so I wanted to be clear on, because I have to admit, it actually doesn't seem like that much more in the third column.
Okay.
And so that's the only reason why I was asking if potentially you were doing the third column just to share with us that it's like, well,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, it's up to you guys. I mean, really the only thing is the impact would be, you know, the experience and the travel time. So we could open up that option and say, well, hey, let's go from Woodland to YOLO to Knights Landing and then Knights Landing to YOLO to Woodland.
Again, I don't know if this was your intention, but I mean, at least in the first column, there's no difference, right, between your second mm-hmm. and your third. The second row is 1 minute difference, right? The fifth is another 1 minute difference. Really, the only bigger differences I see is your max search delay, which is 15 minutes between your second and your third, and then 10%, again, that's why I was sort of curious, above 60, it feels like it's probably roughly the same. But I was unsure if potentially that was the recommendation.
Yeah, I think for us, what we were kind of aiming at is just more of the experience and the travel time, even though, like, yeah, it was only, like, an additional, like, on average minute, but if we do run into these issues where the vehicle is just, like, constantly going back and forth, we might end up running into the same issues that Renters is dealing with.
Okay. And I would just add, it's easier to add something than to take it away.
That is very true.
And so, you know, if we see that there is demand for people from Yolo that are trying to go to Nice Landing or vice versa, we could always add that in. But once we have it and if we realize that, you know, it's clogging up the system with people going back and forth, you know, it's harder to take that away at that point.
That's good. Last question, at least I had, and then we can take a public comment unless my fellow directors have any additional, was the Sunday versus Saturday. I feel like we've probably had this discussion. I just wanted to be just reminded of it. How was Sunday chosen versus no service on versus Saturday?
I think this predates both of us.
Oh, okay.
So it goes back to the original your ride where it operates in Winters on Saturday and Nice Landing on Sunday.
Is there something that makes it so it can't just simply operate on
it's just Saturdays?
I was actually curious why Saturday versus Sunday. I mean, okay. For me personally,
yeah.
I would stay home on Sunday. So yeah. I mean, did we talk to the residents, or I was just trying to figure out how you decided. Okay, perfect.
From what I remember doing outreach, even at the Davis Migrant Center and as well as Nice Landing, when we did talk to some of the local members, the majority of them were farm workers, and they're like, Sunday is our free day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sunday is the day where we do all of our grocery shopping or just like our outings. And so Saturdays, a lot of them are still working. And so I think that's why we ended up kind of falling on Sunday would be my kind of like best guess from memory, was because a lot of them are like, we're still working on Saturdays, so it makes no sense to do it on a Saturday versus like Sunday is kind of like a rest day. I think that's why we landed on Sundays.
Okay. So just on that, and then maybe we can take it to public comment unless there are any more questions. Okay. As you're collecting more information, could you actually just ask riders if they would prefer Saturday or Sunday? I'm not even suggesting from a cost perspective that you add an additional day. I'm just curious if we ask riders what they would prefer, what they would say. Okay. And with that, let's take public comment.
Alan Hirsch, Lorax. I suggested for maybe we put bike racks at the 32 stops in Yolo. Maybe bike racks for that last mile might be kind of an interesting thing to do. Maybe a nice contribution to the library too. Maybe a little money there. I'm wondering whether subsidized zip cars might be better as an alternative to some of the situations. Maybe as a consideration. I don't know whether you can do that. But I want to riff off comments that Lucas is always really conscious of the budget and the spending and cost effectiveness. I appreciate that. And I also want to mention that Josh Chaplin said at Tuesday night's meeting that YOLO TD is not in a great physical situation. And I hear lots of discussion about improving the ridership, and I'm concerned about the cost of the service. How much is the cost per ride? How much is the cost per passenger mile? Because we have so much money here, and maybe investing the money in fixed route might be more cost-effective here. IA is going to eat this agency. We have to generate 57 million miles of VMT reduced by transit alternatives in this county. I think about 6 or 8 million of that has to be from microtransit, and there has to be new VMT reduction, not just trips. It has to be the people that we've given up their cars and are now riding in the VMT. The new rides, if they're shifted from buses, that's not VMT reduction. So it's very important that basically we look at the cost for VMT, cost per trip, and see how cost effective this is. Because certainly this is much more expensive than a fixed route service. I think if you were at $8 to $10 a passenger mile, $8 to $12, $15 a passenger mile, that's really expensive. You can take Lyft and
Zipcar are a lot less expensive than that. I understand it's a great public service. We want to do this thing, and it certainly is a social equity thing. I think it's wonderful. But can we afford this? Because this is really expensive. This is really expensive taxi service. Not quite taxi, but it's expensive. It's $45 an hour. I did the calculation, 2,300 hours times 180,000. So it's very expensive. How many people do we get in the bus at a given time? What's the VMT reduction? What's the actual greenhouse gas reduction? Because we're using microtransit as a mitigation for a significant part of the I-80. And we should know what that is. We should be getting some numbers down how expensive it is. I don't hear any discussion about that. We talk about improving service, and that's wonderful, but how expensive is it to the general public? If Yola Transportation, as Josh said, is not in great financial situation, I think we should be. We need to know what's the most cost-effective way to spend our public money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Any online public comments?
There are no public comments online.
Okay.
We did receive a public comment on this item earlier today, I believe, and that was forwarded to your inboxes.
Okay, perfect.
I think Lucas made the motion, and I would second it. And I just wanted to ask, though, is there a time when we'll talk about urban versus rural setting in transportation? Because it is something that we're experiencing, and we can't change where our cities are. So it is something maybe to address at some time.
Yeah, we have, for the microtransit in particular, we talked about having a 6 months, so we just did the 3 months. We talked about the 6 months review, of kind of 6 months worth of data, and that being the time when we would want to look at any changes to that. Because I feel like 6 months of data is enough to sort of start really informing decisions. It's still too soon at this point. We want to see how things stabilize. And then the other option, and we'll be getting actually our next item is about the budget and work plan process, but one of the key inputs to the budget process and work planning is talking about what, if any, service changes we would want to see in the coming fiscal year. I mean, we can make service changes at any time, but that's kind of the reasonable time to do it because that's when we can, you know, understand how much it's going to cost and where that money might come from. So the budget process would also be an opportunity to talk about that.
Okay. Thank you. I was seconding Lucas's motion if he was.
That's great.
So, the motion, I'm sorry, I was just clarifying.
The motion is to add YOLO to Woodland only. That's is what has been recommended by after the discussion with staff.
Thank you. All right. So I have a motion by Director Barrix and a second by Director Lauren.
YOLO County?
Aye.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
Woodland is absent. You have.
So the motion passes.
It passes, yes.
I got you. I'm right there with you.
Me too.
I've only shared one of these before. And it wasn't this one. Okay. So with that, that's actually a perfect segue to go into the budget. So item 6, fiscal year 24-25, work plan and budget process.
All right. Thank you very much. I don't know where to look in this room, and I feel like I'm not looking at you guys, but yeah, all right. I'll start with over there. So we're going to be talking about the upcoming fiscal year, our budgeting work planning process. This is something that, of course, happens every year. But I wanted, and usually we just bring you the draft budget, but we thought it would be good to just check in advance to talk about what our process looks like and get any feedback from you, any refinements or changes that you would like to see to our process to make sure that it feels like it's going to work for the board. So next slide. So here's an outline. We're going to talk first about the budget, state and federal funding sources, new and emerging sources of funding, what our process looks like according to our bylaws, and then some of the concerns and feedback that we've heard. And then we'll talk about work planning and how we want to integrate the work planning with the budgeting process for the first time this year. And we'll finish by kind of laying out what that proposed process will look like. Next slide. So starting with what are our federal and state funding? This is really the backbone of how we fund our transit service as well as our transportation planning and activities and administrative costs. So Federal funding, we get federal formula funds for transit through the 5307 and 5311 programs primarily. These make up about 20 to 30% of our budget. It can only be spent on transit, and that can include transit operations, capital projects, as well as planning activities. It does require a local match, so it needs a 50% local match for transit operations, which is quite high. It's only a 20% local match for capital projects. And then planning projects also fall into that same category, where we're needing a 20% match. Most of the one-time COVID recovery funds that we've received also fall into this bucket. So it's kind of COVID money funneled into the 5307 or 5311 buckets, but with some easing of the requirements. Like for those one-time COVID funds, we didn't have local match requirements for those. So we could use it, 100% on operations without having a local match. Next slide. Our state funding primarily comes through, almost exclusively comes through the California Transportation Development Act, or TDA Act of, I believe, 1972. It's approximately half of our budget, and it serves as our local match in Yolo County because we're not a self-help county. We do not have, local sales taxes that we invest in transit. So this is where that match comes from in order for us to be able to pull down those federal funds. It comes in two flavors. The first is the state transit assistance, which is funded by a tax on diesel fuel. It can only be used for transit, and that's about 10 to 20% of our budget. It's starting to increase, and I don't know why. It's been a little bit higher in the last couple of years than it was before. The second kind of flavor of that state money is the local transportation funds, or LTF. These are funds that are prioritized for transit. They're funded by the state's quarter-cent general sales tax. They can be claimed by jurisdictions for other transportation needs if there's certain conditions that are met, and we'll talk about that in a minute. And that's about 25 to 35% of our budget. Next slide. So claiming those LTF funds for other uses. SACOG determines which local transportation projects are eligible for LTF funding other than transit. They have what's called their unmet transit needs process every year. Basically, that LTF money can only be flexed for other purposes if they determine that there are no unmet transit needs that are reasonable to meet in the county. So that is a process where, and we work with them on going out and getting public input, asking for, comments of people if they have needs that they feel are unmet. And then SACOG goes through a process of identifying which of those are unmet transit needs and which of those unmet transit needs are reasonable to meet. And then once they've made their determination, then those funds can then be allocated for other things. So currently, Yolo TD uses about 48% of our available state funds, and then about 52% are claimed by Yolo County jurisdictions for other needs. So last year, we had about $18.2 million in those funds, and about $9 million of it went to us, and $9.2 million to the local jurisdictions. Next slide. So other sources of funding in our budget, these are some of the smaller ones. Passenger fares are about $1 million. Cash Creek Casino Mitigation, we get about $1.2 million from them every year. Fuel sales and renewable energy credits. Causeway Connection Service, that is currently funded by a combination of funds from UC Davis, as well as some federal funds that pass through SAC-RT. And then grants for capital and planning projects, this is a kind of a big chunk. It's about $4.5 million. It's pretty big this year. It's not that big every year. It really varies depending on what we have. So $2 million of that was for the Yolo Lady project, right, that came through SACOG. So that's kind of a big chunk of change. Next slide. All right, new and emerging sources of funding. So there was a budget bailout for transit last year, SB 125. It provides about $3.1 billion in transit funds, both for capital and operations, for over 4 years. A lot of it is capital funds, but they can be flexed for operations. In other words, normally you could only use these for capital projects, but they're allowing agencies to use them for operations because of this issue of the shortfall, a structural shortfall that many, particularly larger agencies, are really experiencing with drops in ridership, and those one-time COVID funds expiring. SACOG is, that's the MPOs, in our case at SACOG, are given a kind of their bucket of that money to award. SACOG did an initial round of a small amount of money, and then they're going to kind of, they're saying right now they're going to award the rest of it via a competitive program this spring. And then the Yolo 80 project, as was referenced during public comment, there is a VMT mitigation plan, and that VMT mitigation plan relies on a combination of one-time mitigation from the one-time capital dollars that would be used to build the project, and then it also commits ongoing toll revenue of approximately $3 million annually. Again, the EIR has not been finalized and certified yet, so some of the questions and uncertainty that we're hearing are just due to the fact that it's not yet finalized. And, you know, of course, we have Director Wong here who can answer any questions about that. But we estimate about $3 million annually for YOLO TD transit operations and our voluntary trip reduction program, YOLO Commute, going forward. So that's an exciting opportunity to expand transit and use those funds for transit operations in a reliable, ongoing way. Next slide. Okay. So that's the kind of the snapshot of like what our sort of underlying budget inputs are on the revenue side. What does our process look like? Under our YOLO TD bylaws, it's actually very specific. So SACOG issues those LTF apportionments. That's the TDA. We don't get that until mid-March. So that's the first step, because we need to know how much, you know, it depends on gas tax revenues and all these things. So that's the first step, is how much money is going to be available. By April 30th, we are required to share a draft budget with local jurisdictions. And then we have our Technical Advisory Committee and Citizens Advisory Committees both meet and review and provide input on the budget. We have it under the bylaws. You only have to discuss it in June, but we like to bring it to you in May as well as an informational discussion. And then the jurisdictions by May 30th can request changes in writing, which we would then share with you. And by June 30th, the board must approve at least a preliminary budget. And then if needed, the board isn't comfortable approving a final budget, then has until August 30th to finalize the budget. So that's what our bylaws say regarding the process. And that's kind of largely the process we've been using for the last few years. Next slide. So some of the feedback that we've heard from our member jurisdictions, there is concern about the long-term financial forecast. You know, we did do a five-year financial forecast last year for the first time, showing how those COVID one-time recovery funds are going away. And uncertainty about how those funds would be replaced. So, you know, clearly concern from our member jurisdictions about what's the impact going to be on LTF revenue, and would YOLO TD need to take more of that LTF revenue to maintain operations, particularly as costs continue to go up in our inflationary environment. There was feedback that the city manager should be more directly engaged in the budget process. So our TAC, our Technical Advisory Committee, is comprised of the Public Works Directors and Community Development Directors, but there was a sense that the city manager should directly be more involved in those conversations, and they'd also like to receive the draft budget as early as possible. That's obviously constrained because we don't get the information from SACOG until mid-March, but we also recognize that, you know, this has real impact for the city's ability to develop their budgets as well. Next slide. Okay, so I'm almost done. I know it's a lot of talking, but hopefully this is helpful. For our annual work plan, so our bylaws do not specify that we would do an annual work plan, but it is a best practice. So we've recently done annual work plans. The first was adopted by the board in October 2021. Or I should say the first recently. I don't know, you know, back historically if there were before. But we did one in October 2021, and then we updated and it was adopted again in November 2022. We did not – I'm sorry, that's a typo. It should say fall 2023. That update was postponed to sync up with our annual budget process. We came to you last July and said, do you want us to try to sync this up with the budget? And the answer was yes. And so we're sort of still operating from a pretty outdated budget at this – or excuse me, outdated work plan at this point. But we think it just makes good sense going forward for the budget and work plan to be on the same timeline. So we're currently working on that right now. Next slide. So how do we put this all together? You know, integrating a work plan into our budgeting process for the first time, and also acknowledging the feedback that we've heard from our city managers and wanting to make sure that we involve them in the process. So March 21st is when the state caucus told us that we're going to get our TDA apportionment. So that's coming right up. Our goal is to release our draft work plan and the TDA section of our budget, so not the entire budget, but just that TDA portion, which is really impactful for our local jurisdictions, by April 19th, and then have the full draft work plan and full draft budget by April 30th. Our COC meeting is scheduled for April 30th, so they would have the opportunity to provide that feedback then, and we, of course, would try to get to them as soon as possible. And then we're thinking of we currently do have a TAC meeting scheduled, but it doesn't include the city managers. So we're thinking about maybe working to actually schedule a meeting that does include the city managers as well as the TAC, so they can kind of choose who they want to have representing them. And our TAC is not just our cities. It's also Unitrans. It's also the Air District, SACOG. So it's a few other stakeholders as well. But we think it's the right mix of people that should be, that's why they're on our TAC, and those categories are actually identified in our bylaws as far as who's on that TAC. So our suggestion is that we would, you know, try to be very intentional about scheduling that meeting for any of the city managers who can and want to attend. And then we have our May 13th board meeting. We would have a draft budget, and we would be able to report to you, hopefully, you know, based on the conversations that we'd have with the city managers, and or they can come forward and share their feedback with you. And then, again, they can share any requested writing, changes in writing by May 30th based on what's in our bylaws. And then we have a June 10th board meeting scheduled to approve the budget and work plan, both. And then if need be, if we only adopt a preliminary budget in June, we could come back to a meeting on July 8th, where we could do a final budget at that time. We do not have a meeting scheduled for August. We've decided the last few years we've taken August off. We could, of course, schedule a meeting if need be, because technically we have in the bylaws until August 30th to adopt the budget if need be. So I will stop there and see what questions or feedback you have.
All right. Thank you so much, Autumn. Directors. Okay. Chair Chapman?
No, just quick question. Is there a way that, you know, you said our work plan, but that isn't a requirement in the bylaws right now. Is that something that we should look at and address and update the bylaws to include that, or is that something that's further out?
I mean, potentially. You know, many agencies do have it in their bylaws that they have to adopt the work plan, and some transportation agencies actually, it's a requirement under federal law for the MCOs. So,
yeah,
it's certainly an option, and I would leave that to the board if you think that's a good idea. But I think it's a good idea, and I want to continue doing it. I think it's good for all of us to have a work plan.
Yeah, I think it would be, seems like best practice, and if we can flag that and bring it back in the future, I think that would be great. Thank you.
Autumn, just for me, I want to make sure that in the budget process, as you pointed out last year, there was a projection, a five-year projection included. I don't know how normal it is for us to include five-year projections, but would like to continue to update those projections. And so that would be my only thing. I just want that to continue to be included, because obviously I'm aware of the fiscal cliff, and I think we all are, and just continuing to have it top of mind for us as we're approving these budgets and then going back to our jurisdictions and communicating where we're at as a county.
Absolutely. We can continue to do that.
Okay, perfect. All right. With that, I will take public comment. All right. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Alan Hirsch again. Last year, the five-year plan was wonderful. I'm glad we have a new finance director. I think it's very, very important. The budget is about $13-14 million a year. We generate about $13-14 million of passenger miles a year. I think the cost effectiveness of that's going to drop because of, the microtransit, the increase in microtransit. I'm quite concerned about that. But I'm quite concerned that the I-80 project is going to require us to put 57 million passenger miles a year, four times increase on transit. Over the next 20 years, we have to get there. And I have not seen a plan how we're going to get there and we're going to finance that. And we are signing on the dotted line with the EIR and the project to do that. This agency is, because Greg, as he's mentioned, at the December 11th meeting, Caltrans doesn't do transit, Caltrans doesn't do mitigation long term. This agency and this county and these taxpayers are going to have to do it because we've been asked locally. So I think modified, we need a 20-year plan. What's this agency going to look like in 20 years when we have to do 57 million miles of mitigation between trip reduction, microtransit, and buses? Because I don't think there's some capital money that's funded, but that's going to run out. We have to commit into perpetuity, just like we're building a freeway, into perpetuity to fund that. To be physically responsible, I think we need to have a plan that can fund that. And I've been asking Josh for that, and I don't think he's able to come up with that. I've talked with Brian Abernathy, he hasn't come up with this. I don't see a plan. So I don't think it's really responsible for us as an agency to sign on to that without a plan to see how that's going to be funded. A five times increase in the ridership of buses and microtransit in this county in 20 years. How are we going to get there? What's the glide path? That's equivalent to almost the ridership of light rail in Yolok, in Sacramento County. And they spent billions of dollars to build that system to attract the riders. It's not just build from those, it's hard to attract those riders. So I think a 20-year plan showing how you're going to finance that. Not just, yes, we can count the one-time capital funds, but we need to count the other stuff. And I'm also concerned, we talked about $3 million in toll revenue. What was presented in the slide number 16 on December 11th was $9 million a year toll revenue. I don't know what the difference is. What happened to that $6 million? And you also chose alternative 4 on that, which reduced your revenue by 60%. The fund, this 4X increase by 60%. I just don't think we have a good financial plan for this district. And you guys are not going to be here in 20 years, but I think it's just responsible to have that plan, at least have it laid out. Someone needs to take a spreadsheet and do it. And I hope that's part of your budget plan this year. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Mr. Hirsch, is there any additional public comment online as well? Okay, I bring it back. Autumn, did you want to address something?
Yeah, if I may. I just want to clarify a few pieces. So, first of all, we are not the lead agency on the Yolo 80 project. Caltrans is. They are responsible for implementation of their EIR. We are not. We are responsible, and we will be signing agreements with Caltrans for a specific dollar amount that we would be getting in terms of mitigation dollars and what we would do with those dollars. All of those things will come to you. I mentioned $3 million of mitigation funds on an ongoing basis funded by toll revenue that are projected to come to Yolo TD, but Mr. Hirsch is correct. There is $9 million projected in the EIR. Those other $6 million are for other agencies. It's for Unitrans. It's for Capital Corridor. It's for Causeway Connection, which also includes SAC-RT, not just us. So there are a number of other mitigation measures that are funded both, again, initially through capital dollars and then long-term through toll revenue, but about approximately, again, the EIR is not finalized, about $3 million a year we anticipate will come to Yolo TD. This question about, you know, unfunded, you know, liabilities that we're going to be on the hook for, I don't have any expectation that that is the case, and I certainly would not agree to anything on behalf of our agency that would obligate us to unfunded liabilities. Thank you.
Okay. I would also note that part of some of our discussions at TACOG was, again, regarding who would be responsible for costs. That is one of the reasons why we actually do have a tolling authority. And so I would just flag that for everyone as well, including the public, that YOLCD would not be responsible for that. And that was something that has been discussed at length. Okay. So are there any other questions, feedback, or comments for Autumn? Director Warren?
I just had a rural comment to make. And basically, you know, I live in the city of Winners, represent Winners. Winners does not have Uber. It does not have Lyft. It does not have a Zipcar. It does not have an enterprise rent-a-car. It does not have any rent-a-car. It's very limited. And those are market forces. We can't control the market forces, but Yolo Transportation District is, in its core values, dedicated to equity. And part of our service, such as the V-Line, is to provide equity and opportunity to Yolo. So I just wanted to mention that. And then the other thing, which I hope I'm not taking up too much time, but I used to work for Yolo Food Bank. The reason I'm mentioning Yolo Food Bank is that a food bank such as YSB provides food like to where you were distribution all over the county. It's far more expensive to run that business, to run that model of providing food where people are than it would be in an urban setting where the people are concentrated in one place. It's a different reality. And it's, I think that reality is something that all of us know and share, and all of us went into public service knowing. And that reality is also part of Yolo Transportation District. So I just wanted to point that out. And thank you for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Director Lauren, and apologies if my computer went dead while you were talking because I hadn't plugged it in.
That's okay. Any other comments or feedback from my colleagues? Chair Chapman?
No, nothing additional. Just thank you for Autumn and for clarifying what you clarified, and thank you, Director Warren, for your comments. Much appreciated.
All right, perfect. I do not think there was an action that needs. Oh, go ahead.
Okay, yeah, really. Apologies, really quickly. So appreciate the sort of adjustments slightly the proposed process for this year. It was referenced once in the staff report around city managers and county administrator, and then the rest of the report is all about city manager, city manager, city manager. I think it's both, but and I assume so in the presentation as well. But just want to make sure that that's the case. And then there was one other item. Sorry. Actually, you know what? I'm good. Apologies. So I do really appreciate, yeah, just making sure, clarifying that the county administrator is part of that discussion process. Thank you.
Apologies for that oversight.
All good.
I'm slowly getting back to the mic. Okay, I think we're all good. All right. With that, I do not think there was an actual action on this, right? So thank you again for the presentation. Let's move on. We are actually fairly on time, which I appreciate. To agenda item 7, which is administrative reports. I will start with A, board members' verbal reports. Are there any report outs by any of my fellow directors? I'm seeing no to the right of me, no to the left. Chair Chapman, do you have any verbal report outs?
I do not. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Let's move on to TransDev's report out.
Good evening, Vice Chair Hurley and directors. Not much to board aside that we're still moving forward. We're on track where we want to be for recruiting. Plenty of applications coming in. It's just sifting through and finding the right ones and bringing in the time. So we want to keep our classes still small so we can ensure they get the training they need and get out in a amount of time. Any other questions? No?
Questions? Chair Chapman, questions? Bill?
For me, thank you.
Perfect. All right, let's move on to our executive director's report out.
Great, and my computer is back, so I have my notes in front of me. First of all, on the Yolo Eating Managed Lanes, you do have a detailed, as usual, monthly report in your packet, and I'm happy to answer any questions about that. I will share the update that the CTC has now posted their agenda for the March 21st to 22nd meeting in San Jose, and that was when after our packet went out, and it does include one action related to the YOLO 80 project. So that is there, and happy to answer questions about that. Audit, everyone's favorite topic. We have been in the midst of a protracted audit of our fiscal year 22-23. As you'll recall, we had a different director of finance, Leo Levinson, who oversaw a transition to a new accounting software. That was the first year that we did that new software. And so we now have a new director of finance, Chaz Cedrico, who is overseeing an audit for a year she was not here, where it was the first year we were using new accounting software. And we have discovered a lot of issues. Our auditors have discovered a lot of issues. The audit is taking a very long time to complete, in part because our team is having to go and research questions, for Chaz, who was not there. So there are some real challenges with the new software. Not to say that we're going to jettison it, but we're learning what we need to do differently. There was also some issues with some federal funding was charged to the wrong grant. It's for expenses that were eligible, but they were charged to the wrong grant, which is clearly a big deal for FTA. And so we're working with both our auditors and FTA to clear that and to make sure that gets recharged to the correct account. We've also added YOLO Commute as a custodial fund this year, so we fiscally sponsor YOLO Commute. They've been doing their own taxes separately. Our auditors have now determined that we need to be doing them as part of our taxes, and so that is also a change. So for all of these reasons, our audit is not done. It's been going on for 3.5 months now, and it's been a huge heavy lift for our finance team. We think that we're getting towards the end of it, but part of the deal is with not having that complete is our reporting to the Federal Transit Administration, much of which relies on having finalized audited numbers, is not complete. So we are now behind also on a lot of our reporting to FTA because our audit is not done. So this is kind of putting an enormous amount of pressure on our finance team, as well as Daisy and our operations team, who also are part of the reporting for that. So I wanted to just kind of daylight that, we are really struggling to get through a lot of these very challenging reporting and auditing timelines that are kind of that are weighing on us at the moment. With that, we've started working on the work plan. We have not started working on our budget because we are trying to get through our audit and all of our reporting for the last fiscal year. So, you know, we still fully intend to meet our budget deadlines that we just talked about, but I just wanted to be transparent with you all about some of the challenges that we're facing now and that you're going to get some not great reports when our audit is finalized. On to some cheerier stuff. The next week, the SACOG board is meeting in Woodland, the first time in Yolo County. Yolo Bus is going to be providing transportation for the board for a tour of the area. And our own Brenda Loma Lee, who has presented to this board, she's going to be giving a presentation on some of her amazing efforts to engage rural underserved communities in developing our active transportation vision for Yolo County. So she's going to be on the bus giving some of that for those of you who will be there. And we're really excited for that. I wanted to just share Christopher Quanley, our marketing communications director, his name came up. He's on medical leave right now. He's going to be out through the end of April. So I know you'll join me in wishing, I know many of you know him, you'll join me in wishing him well, and we look forward to welcoming him back at the beginning of May. One of our awesome interns, Nathaniel or Nate Jurgensen, who's been with us for 2 years now, who's a recent Sac State graduate, is holding it down with support from Daisy and Brian so that we're kind of continuing our communications. It hasn't ground to a halt, but we do have really limited communications capacity right now. Until we get Christopher back. So, we just friggin' love our interns. We get some really amazing folks, and including Daisy, who started as an intern. So you never know what's going to happen when you get a great intern. Anyway, that concludes my report.
Great. Autumn, did you roll your Yolo 88 Minutes Brains project update? That was kind of rolled into your executive report, right?
Correct.
I just wanted to make sure.
Can I ask a question?
Oh, yes, of course.
On the audit, you explained the difficulties and that it's not done, but is there a schedule that's in place for completion and some milestones to complete?
This is the latest that I've gotten, both from talking, obviously I've been talking with Chaz, but also connected directly with the auditor. They feel like we're very close, we're within a week. Of completing it.
Thank you.
Any other questions for my colleagues? Chapman, I see you, and you appear that you do not have any questions.
No other questions. Thank you. I appreciate you, Kathy.
I'm trying to read your facial expression.
Yeah, you're all good. Thank you.
All right. I will do public comment, but first I just wanted to check on long-range calendar.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Madam Vice Chair, if we could just pull that up really quick, I'll show you some of the things we have coming up in the next few months. Woodland Transit Center relocation, this is an item that's been pushed back. We've been working with Woodland City staff to try to make sure we are all on the same page. We think we're very close. We're going to be taking this to the Woodland City Council this month and then bringing it to the board in April. We are excited to share with you a presentation from our friends at Yolo County on their climate action and adaptation plan, which actually has a lot of a focus on transportation, and we thought it was important for you to hear from them about that, so they'll be coming and presenting. Short-range transit plan consultant agreement. This is our 5 to 7 year plan for how we want to see our transit evolve. And then we're hoping, again, in April, to be able to bring you that salary survey and some adjustments to our positions that we've also been working on. And that has also been, frankly, backburner due to some of the audit issues that we've been working on. But we're hopeful we can get that to you next month. Obviously, a high priority for many folks on staff for us to move that forward. In May, draft work plan and budget, as we just talked about, we're cautiously optimistic we will be able to finally bring you our audited financial report for fiscal year 22-23, and then bringing back updates to our ADA paratransit ridership policy, rider information, and service changes, et cetera. And I will stop there.
Great, perfect. Any questions from my colleagues? All right. With that, I will take public comment. Hello, Mr. Hirsch. Welcome.
Thank you for indulging me once again. I was kind of confused about, there's a $105 million request at the CTC on the 21st to fund the I-80 project. And I don't see, haven't seen that mentioned in any previous agenda. And no notice of that. I assume you want public input on that. I mean, that's a good public process. Sorry if I'm boring people here. $105 million is significant. I'm surprised it wasn't announced here. It wasn't discussed. I assume you said this one item. Is that the CARTA item or the $105 million to fund IA? That's certainly our rubric So I'm kind of curious why that wasn't discussed to the public, wasn't made visible, and it wasn't discussed here at all this evening. There's some reference to it. I just wonder why there wasn't more public discussion, because that's pretty important in terms of funding this project. Because if you have 86, we can't really do it. So it's just not very open. I also don't see on the calendar where this body is going to sign an agreement with Caltrans to provide the mitigation fund, an MOU. That's not on the calendar here. I'm confused. Maybe Greg can tell me when that will be coming, because I think we need to have the has to have a mitigation plan that has to be funded and committed to, and just before this goes forward. I think that's important. Was there a date given on the final EIR and the release of that? I heard Greg earlier, it's late March probably, but I think that should be put in the public record. I'm surprised. That's a pretty important milestone for this group. It's such a big agency. I mean, our budget's about $14 million, and this project is hundreds of millions. It's a project that's kind of eating Yolo County on our transportation funding. I'm really kind of disturbed that there haven't been any discussion of this request for CTC funding previous at this body. It's not very transparent.
Thank you very much for your public comment. Director Bernstein?
I just want to clarify. So this board took action to approve the request to CTC, I want to say in October of 2022, was we originally applied for those funds. We did not get them the first time around, and CTC staff has given us the opportunity to apply again for the exact same project for the exact same dollar amount. And so we did not know that it was in the agenda. The agenda was just posted last Friday. We knew that this was coming, and it's been in all of your reports that we would be every month, this was a funding request would be pending with the CTC, and it was just agendized last Friday.
Thank you so much. Any additional feedback questions from my colleagues? All right. Hi, Greg. How are you? Good. So the final EIR. Yeah, it's
right. Oh, there you go. Hey, how's that? So the plan. Late March is when the actual work gets done.
Okay.
You know, a lot of comments. Appreciate everybody's feedback. It was great. You're over 600 plus. So,
wow.
You know, we had some work to do. And there's about 80 left to deal with. But, you know, the plan is to get to the end of March. And there's a 10-day period where, and I'm not the CEQA guy, but there's a 10-day period where we respond, or we let people see how we responded. Some of the agency requirements, the agency comments, and then we signed the NOD, the record of decision on the NEPA side. So we have some work to get us to probably mid-April. So that's the plan.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I know that was, you weren't expecting the question.
No, that's fine. Anything.
Appreciate the answer. Any additional questions? All right. Well, then with that, I will take a motion to adjourn. All right. All in favor? All right. This meeting's adjourned.
Good night, everyone.